In continuation with the discourses and teachings that Jesus has been giving in the temple area in Jerusalem, we turn now to a question from a scholar of the law about the greatest commandment. And the answer that Jesus gives isn't altogether different from the instruction that he left us last week when he was tested by the elders about paying taxes to Caesar. We remember from last week that Jesus concluded that segment by saying, "Render to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's." If you follow that sequence in the events here in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 22, you find the Sadducees also attempt to put Jesus' wits to the test by asking him about the anticipations of the resurrection. Though we didn't read it between last week and now, we skipped over it. We go to the passage that follows that one. Though we see Jesus kind of tested one point after another, and he always exceeds the expectations of those who ask him these daring questions. Now, as we read today, the Pharisees have another go at him, but perhaps with a more inquisitive motive. We don't know why, but the hint in the gospel we've read today may have been because the Sadducees and Pharisees were at odds with one another. Kind of, I suppose, something akin to that would be like Democrats and Republicans. You know, they see him shut up the Sadducees. It's like, oh, let's give him another ear. It's like, maybe this guy is legit. So they have a scholar. They get together and they have a scholar, probably a reputable one in their group, come forward and say, "Lord, which of the commandments is the greatest?" And he responds, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and with all your mind." And then, perhaps as the scholar is beginning to turn, like with satisfaction, Jesus surprises him with a follow-up: "To love your neighbor as yourself." And then he concludes by saying that the law, which also means the entire gospel message, depends on these two commandments, their fulfillment, their realization. These two commandments are not centerpieces for us because they are mentioned early in the list of the Ten Commandments, but because, as our Lord makes clear, every proactive response to Jesus is motivated by these two commandments. Motivated by love. Motivated by the passion of the cross that is shed onto us. Only the childish in the world act by the compulsion of mere duty, while the childlike will always be moved by love. The childish person will follow the commandments because they know that they have to, but the childlike will respond because they know they get to. The former is wearied by obligation, but the latter is always prompted and propelled by the opportunity. This is the point, at least in part, that Jesus is making by emphasizing an investment of our entire heart, our entire soul, and all of our mind. In addition to this, by adding the second commandment, which Jesus says resembles the first, like last week, he reiterates that the two dimensions of the commandments are never at odds with one another. If they are, it's only because we have actually favored one over the other, or have simply been attentive to one and neglectful to the other. But they are complementary. They support one another. There is no tension between the first commandment, which covers the laws of love towards God, and the second commandment, which cover the laws towards love of neighbor. They do not compete, but complement one another. And they are not only free of tension with one another, but they, in a sense, they complete one another. They will always go together as two sides of the same coin. Two realities, all one. As the Old Testament reading reminds us, the dictations of the law to love God means that we always love what he loves. And that means everyone and everything that he has fashioned, but beginning with our neighbors that God has made proximate to us, especially those who are in most need, those who are poor. When we move on from there to the second reading of St. Paul, it is outlined for us in his letter to the church of Thessalonica, that we know how to love God because Jesus has loved us first. He set the first example for the apostles, and as St. Paul says to the disciples in Thessalonica, like, you know that this message is genuine because you witnessed our example, the example that we have learned, the one that has been handed on to us. We know how to love because God has shown us what it means to be loved. When our Lord concludes his statement, he makes it firmly clear that these commandments are central to our discernment of Christian discipleship. No other motive will ever, nor ever could, sufficiently replace these. They should continue to drive us in our mission and help us to be creative in applying them to the circumstances of the time in which we live. And speaking of the circumstances of our time, I imagine many of you, if not all of you, have heard through the media or through someone else who has heard through the media the comments of our Holy Father in the recent documentary that was premiered in Rome just a few days ago, when he spoke favorably about civil unions with those in homosexual relationships. And no doubt you've probably been hearing how the media has been politicizing it from end to end. Before commenting, please take a deep breath. Do not have any anxiety about this. Our Holy Father neither spoke heretically nor inconsistently with the gospel message. This is also not inconsistent with the Holy Father's pastoral history. If we look back, you know, contextually speaking, if we look back years ago during the time in which he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires, at the time in which the Argentina was taking legislative action to recognize same-sex marriage, you know, the Holy Father at the time was Archbishop, Archbishop Bergoglio. He argued with the state, and I quote, "This is inconsistent with God's plan." As an alternative, he then recommended the state to legislate civil unions in which same-sex couples could be protected and provided under the law, which would be likened to the kinds of benefits that heterosexual couples are provided under the law by our own state. That while we don't condone a marriage bond, there is certainly a need for family. Everyone is called to live in a family. The Holy Father then, as now, doesn't condone same-sex behavior, but nor recognizes the potential for a marriage bond, but nevertheless, to reiterate what he said himself in the documentary, homosexual people have the right to be in a family. They are the children of God and have the right to a family. Nobody should ever be thrown out or be made miserable over it. That's distinct language which falls within the context and is accurate in the gospel message. Years ago, I mean, just to kind of relate to this, as I heard this message, I tried to relate to this kind of pastoral message that our Holy Father was saying, and it reminded me, you know, years ago when, as I was beginning my priestly formation, my formators, which included Bishop Laverde, made something very clear to me and my brothers who started seminary with me. They told us, brothers, you can live without a sexual life, but you certainly cannot live without intimacy. It's a tragedy that so many priests throughout the world must live alone. I'm quite blessed to serve within a diocese that practically guarantees a life of fraternal love, a life of fraternal company. And it's not reduced to shared labors, but it extends to shared living as well. If you look at the Code of Canon Law, you'll find in it, it's stipulated, even in law, it's not suggested, but it's demanded, that where it can be helped, all priests that work for the same parish should live under the same roof, that they should live together as a fraternal family. You'll find it that by the very nature of the law that, you know, governs us as a community, we need to remember that no one is expected nor should be demanded to live a solitary life. No one is expected to, and no one should be asked to. That doesn't mean it doesn't come with expectations and limitations, as it certainly does with me for the rest of my life, as it will for many people for the rest of their lives. Nonetheless, no one is called to live a solitary or isolated life. Keep in mind what our Lord said. You know, what fulfills the commandments, especially the first one in the second, if communal life, a family life, is what we were made for and what we want to and deeply desire for ourselves, and if that is our hope, we should hope for it for all, not just for a few who are benefited by the best of circumstances, but we must hope for all, especially those who feel isolated and pushed to the wayside and made or treated as though they're not human at all. These are the circumstances in which we live these days, and these are the opportunities that we have to speak out and show how wide the loving arms of God's church is, to show them how ready Christ is to receive all as his children. It comes with limitations, of course, as I said, but we must never stop applying the elements of the gospel within the circumstances of our time. Let us continue to beseech our Blessed Mother, ask her for encouragements and wisdom, and to all the saints and angels that guide us in these times. Thanks be to God.